Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Thanks so much for being with us. As you're listening, remember, we can still take your questions for the mayor. You can get those into me right now by emailing ask, that's A-S-K, at WBAA.org. Mayor, good afternoon.
Hey, Emily, how are you today?
I'm doing all right. And how are you?
Fine, thank you.
So the city had its groundbreaking ceremony for the new public safety building and parking garage just last week. Looks like there's fencing up now along the site. I wanted to ask first, in part because there's a function on the city's website that allows community members to kind of take a virtual tour of the facilities, look at the project timeline. I guess what public feedback has been like for the city for this project? What are you hearing from people? What are they happy about? And what are some concerns or questions that you've heard about this new project?
Well, so far it's been very, very positive. I think people know that the police work, law enforcement is going to continue to change going into the future. And we want to make sure that we're always, one, community-minded, that we have the ability to interact with the community, to provide the services that the community wants, and that we have a building that we can, the officers will have the technology that they need to do a better and more efficient job and to keep them safe. And so, you know, we had the public meeting, COVID, we did a lot of virtual things. It was a little bit hard at that time, but I think, one, you know, we've never actually had an opportunity to build a law enforcement building from the ground up where we could actually design it from the ground up to meet the needs of the community and the police department, because this building is going to have a huge community room in it. It's going to have a plaza area. It's going to have lots of places for police to interact with citizens and different citizens groups and different, do different types of community training and outreach. And so, you know, we're really excited about what that means as we look to the future, not only, you know, strictly from the law enforcement piece that we obviously have to do, but also how do we provide, you know, other services. We currently have an advocate that works in there that helps people that are victims of domestic violence and other crimes and needs certain court work done. We have a person that works with the homeless population, and you know, we'd like to be able to expand what we do into how we spend more time working with people that have mental health issues and addiction issues. And this building, one, will give us the room to do it, but two, with the technology that we're putting in this building, we honestly believe that we're going to be able to cut down the time that our officers spend on paperwork, maybe as much as by 50%. And if we can do that, that's going to allow them a significant amount of additional time to have maybe just a specialized unit that just does working with folks with mental health issues, working with folks with addiction issues, or at least have people like that that we can get people with them much quicker. So if we can pull that off and we can reduce that by 50%, that is really going to increase what we're doing, and we're working with Axon, and we think that that's a very real possibility. So it's a win-win as far as community outreach, law enforcement effectiveness, the ability to provide additional services, make sure our officers go home safe every night, because it's going to be easier to share information and gather information between the shifts and the different divisions with what we'll be doing and how the technology in the building will be laid out. So far it's been a very, very positive response, and but we will certainly continue to listen to the community as we move forward. You know, it's there, like you said, there is a website that people can go to, and we hashtag safety is our priority, and you know, it takes the whole community working together to really achieve that. And I talked about that on the day of the groundbreaking, that we're, you know, all in this together. We are all, you know, safety is our priority, O-U-R, it's all of ours. We're going to have to work together, and I think we're off to a great start.
So when we're talking about just kind of the possibilities new opportunities for the officers as their time is possibly more freed up by new technology. Is that still kind of an idea at this point, a goal, an aspiration, or are there kind of concrete things the police department is already thinking about? Do they plan to meet about that over the next couple of years as this space is completed? And I know I like to ask mayors too, any project that comes up in a city, I'm sure I've asked you this before, for various projects. Have you looked at other cities, other police departments to see what they do and how you can learn from them, you know, as an example?
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously the chief and his team have worked on this for, well, first of all, to answer the first part of your question, we really do believe it's concrete when as far as freeing up the time. I mean, will it be 50% or 60% or 50% or 42%? You know, I don't know. I can't give you an exact number, but we honestly believe from working with this company that what we'll be doing will definitely free our officers up from a significant amount of administrative report writing, evidence tagging, and all of those things that they have to do. And so the chief and his team honestly believe that that is concrete, that at some percentage it will happen. And even if we get 40%, you know, when you 40% of 100 patrolmen is a lot of time. I mean, you couldn't possibly go hire that many new policemen because you just wouldn't have the money. But if you can free up their time through the use of technology, that is just a huge win for the police department and for the community. And certainly, you know, our chief is very involved with the Indiana Association of Chiefs of Police, the International Association of Chief of Police. He's testified in front of Congress on several occasions. So he actively talks to people around the country about what they're doing and ways that we can look and use that. And quite frankly, people talk to us about the same thing, about what we're doing. You know, this technology that we're looking at is groundbreaking, and I'm not sure that there'll be another department of our size, you know, in the country that has some of the things that we'll have here. So yeah, he is very aggressive about being involved in those organizations, having those conversations.
So we're talking about this community room. Looks like there's room for, I want to say it was 265 people. The green space, the city is saying, can be used by the community for meetings and gatherings. Who might be in charge of handling that side of things? Is there going to be a focal point person who works through all of that?
Yeah, you know, we already have that. I keep talking about, we just got to work harder and harder to get our message out. You know, we already have a community outreach division that has four people in it. They gave over 400 presentations to the community, different community groups. Last year, they're in schools, they're in the neighborhoods, they're out doing events. So we already have a four-person division that does community outreach. That's the name of the division. And so that division will be in charge of continuing those types of activities and creating new activities and working to bring people into those spaces within the police department and continue the role that we've had that division for about 5 or 6 years now. And like I said, we've had Adam Murphy, who works with our homeless population and other social issues like that. And then Nora, they've worked with us for about 10 years now doing those things. So we'll continue with that. But we have a four-person community outreach staff already in place.
Yeah, I think I was wondering too. I was just looking at the language the city was using, used by the community. Didn't know if that meant people from within the community could have their own meetings within
that
space.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. Yep.
Okay. So, and this is again slated for completion in 2023. Are you able to talk a little bit about more, I guess, specific parts on that timeline? You know, what people should expect when, or is that still, you know, being negotiated right now?
No, well, we're going to do three bid packages. So the first bid package has been put out, and we've got all the bids back. So that's really good. And it did come in about $500,000 under the engineer's estimate. So okay. That was good. We had to rebid the excavation piece, but on the second time, that number came back well. So, here in the next week or so, you're going to start to see those types of things, do the excavation work, getting the ground ready, starting to do the things that build the foundation that lets you come out of the ground to get things set for the police station and the parking garage. The next package will go out at the end of May, and that'll be a package that will, you'll start to see things getting taller and actually framed in, and that whole structure start to come together. Then the third package that will go out probably sometime in October will be the finish package then, that really finishes out the building, the insides, the doors, all the electric, all those types of heating, air conditioning, cooling, all those types of inside things. So over that two-year period, there'll be a total of three bid packages go out, and the first one is out. We've got it back, and we're finalizing those bids, and you'll start to see the work begin here shortly.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm Emily Seiberg, and we're talking right now with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. So we got a number of listener questions for you today, Mayor. And so because we just touched on the public safety building, we'll go ahead and start with some questions we got about Lafayette law enforcement. So Two different listeners wrote in on the same topic. So Larry writes, Mayor, I think it's been over a year, maybe about a year, since an incident occurred when Lafayette resident Richard Bailey was seriously injured by a police dog while detained. I remember that a special prosecutor was assigned to investigate the possibility of police misconduct. Has there been any activity on the investigation, and when should we expect to read a report?
Yeah, I'll have to defer that to our legal department. I will tell you there has been some movement on that, and it is an ongoing investigation, so I certainly can't say anything else at this time, but I will see, speaking with the chief and the city attorney, if they feel it's appropriate for us to release some additional information at this time.
Okay. And we had another listener write in as well, just kind of asking, what mayor are you and LPD doing to ensure something like this doesn't happen again? And I'll tie that to kind of a second set of questions, kind of similar, just asking generally about, the police department's response to resistance policies. If you personally review those policies, that was a question, and how often those policies are reviewed.
Yeah, I mean, our department's continually reviewing those policies. And I don't look at them personally all the time, but the chief goes over them with me. And as a retired officer, I think I have a good feel for those types of things. And I think our use of force policies are in line with what they should be. I think that we do a good job with them. I mean, again, I can't go into all the Bailey case. But again, I will say this part. It does get a little frustrating sometimes. People forget that we were called there to that situation. That gentleman had allegedly, and I have to use the word allegedly, injured two people significantly when we got there. But somehow all the responsibility is put back on the police, and people seem to have a tendency, some people, if not most people, I'll say most people are very, very supportive of the police department, incredibly supportive. Lose the fact that that's a larger situation involving battery of people and people that were injured. And so I think our policies are good policies, and our chief is very progressive, and he researches things. And I think that our policies are at a good place, and we'll continue. We review them every year, and we'll continue to review them. But, the outcomes in the police world where people are making decisions, people are intoxicated, people are doing different things, sometimes people are very quick to pass judgment on law enforcement and their actions without actually being in the situation and having to make those split-second decisions sometimes.
So you mentioned, and yes, of course, you served on the Lafayette Police Force. I guess, how have some of those policies changed over time, and why is it important that they change and continue to do so in response to events where we're not quite sure what happened, but we want to ensure that people aren't injured, for example, by a canine going forward in this way?
Well, I mean, we'll continue. We did not make any real substantial changes to the policy. Again, I think when that case fully comes out, we'll just see what people think at that particular time. But, I mean, those policies, I mean, obviously everybody always wants to try to use the minimum amount of force that is necessary to subdue someone or take someone into custody or gain control of a situation. But I will tell you from being out in there that is not as easy as it sounds. When people are intoxicated, people have knives, people have guns, people have beer bottles, people have baseball bats, people have other weapons, and there are multiple people involved. And so those policies are always what we want is to use the minimum force necessary to gain control. But that is not always easy to do. And those policies also have to be written in a way that those men and women in those uniforms are going to go home safe to their families at night, too. It's not just a one-way street here. We have to remember that the police officers are human beings, too, doing a very, very difficult job that 99.9% of the people in this country would not do. And as by the few number of applicants that people are getting all over the nation, people even being willing to become police officers now, I think that's becoming more and more evident. And, you know, we don't want to also lose track that 99.99% of the time, millions of police calls that are run every year are handled 100% appropriately with no problems and right by the book. And so, you know, you got to take a broad view of when you start. I know people want to just narrow it in, but you got to take a broad view when you look at policies. And I think our department does a very, very good job with it. And there may be some out there that disagree with me, but I'm standing behind the job that the police department does. And I think our chief is very progressive at looking at our rules and regulations and trying to do the right thing for the community. And I think there are lots and lots of people that support the police department a great deal.
I also wanted to touch base on this today. This week's Indiana's legislature passed a bill overriding a veto from the governor, and it means that local elected leaders will now need to approve any health orders stricter than the state's, and that was effective immediately. And just yesterday, Tippecanoe County Commissioners met with the health department and rescinded the last remaining COVID restriction, which essentially called for social distancing within bars and restaurants. So I guess, how are you as mayor and or how is Lafayette City Council going to be involved in decisions like these, you know, going forward? What is the city of Lafayette's, you know, level of input with some of these, you know, health decisions? Because it may well be that, you know, these decisions are going to continue to have to be made in the coming year.
It's my understanding of the legislation, and I'll have to double check this if you've read it differently, that the city council won't be voting on that, and I'll have input with the county commissioners, but because we have a county health department.
Right.
I think it will be the commissioners that will be making those decisions at the county level. I don't think each city council will be voting, but I will double check that to be sure. But I do, we work well together here. So I think that will continue, and the openness will continue. But I do think it's good that local elected officials have a say in the situation. People were incredibly confused during COVID. And again, I think the health department, Dr. Adler, did a fine job. But people were confused, and there were times where we didn't always agree, and people just really, really couldn't understand how somebody they elected actually had no formal vote, no formal say, not the mayor, not the council, on some of these policies that affect everybody day to day and affect their businesses. So I think this will work fine here in Tippecanoe County. I think we'll continue to work together, and I know the commissioners made their decisions yesterday, and I certainly support that.
So in terms of so we're going down the line. I know that Dr. Adler asked that they not rescind that order, and that is what happened. And again, I think, you know, over this past year, certainly everyone did kind of have to work together, and that will continue to be a factor. What happens, or what do you think should happen down the line if there continue to be I'll use the word disagreement. I don't want that to sound too aggressive, but if there is a parting of the ways on what should happen next, what is the best way for everyone to feel like they have input into what's happening and that the best decisions are being made, not just for, as you've talked about it before, your constituents who elected you, but also from the health department's perspective, they want to feel like that the proper health decisions are being made. You know, how can all of that work together to everyone's benefit?
Well, I think that there will, we will continue the discussions, and I don't know that, there will always will be 100% agreement. There wasn't 100% agreement on everything during this phase, but we were still able to work it out. We were able to get to a good point, and I just feel strongly that can continue, that people around here are reasonable and will continue to be reasonable. But I think this will allow for the community to have a lot more input. Obviously, elected officials are incredibly accessible to people. People know who we are. I mean, I got stopped hundreds and hundreds of times in the grocery stores and different places during this, and took hundreds and hundreds of phone calls. I'm sure that, I do think for the people, for the community, that their elected officials, having a little bit stronger role in this, I think it will work well. I think it'll continue to be collaborative, but I think it'll work well, and we're just going to have to give it a try. Nobody has an exact crystal ball, and we'll just have to, see how it goes and continue to work through it.
So last month we got an update from you on kind of broadly what the city is thinking about in terms of where federal COVID funds could be spent. And you mentioned, a few areas to which that money could be applied, and mentioned that Parks and Rec was impacted financially by the pandemic. So I mentioned that specifically, I guess, in relation to this next listener question. This is from Mark. He writes, "What reasoning was behind the decision to impose a fee for the zoo? Will the train become free, or is it still ticketed? And when the carousel is opened, will it be free?" And he's asking this. This is kind of how he closes out his email. He says, "I have a genuine fear that Columbian Park, instead of being the crown jewel of our community, will become a place that families dread because we have to explain to our children why they can't do things." So it sounds like he's concerned about not being able to afford going. And to clarify, so admission to the zoo was free, and it's now, it looks like, $2 per person for ages 3 and up. So was that a COVID-related decision? Was that kind of the reasoning? Okay.
It really wasn't. That's been on the books for about 5 or 6 years to do that, and we've just kind of been stalling, trying to hold that off as long as we could. And of course, with bringing the penguins, even though, I mean, the penguin exhibit's $2.5 million, so mm-hmm. obviously we're not charging $2 to try to pay for the exhibit. I mean, it would never happen. But with exhibits of that nature, that's going to require us to hire an entire additional zookeeper, and different food, and different medical. And I mean, I think most people realize there are almost, if there are any free zoos around the country of our significance, it's probably because somebody is a benefactor that mm-hmm. helps with that. We just can't, I mean, employees have to get raises each year. Their health insurance goes up. The cost of food goes up for the animals. The cost of veterinary care goes up for the animals. It's just not, it's just not possible to keep everything free, keep our taxes as low as we can, and within, you know, and if it's over those 1%, 2%, or 3%, then, you know, people don't have to pay it. I mean, they don't have to pay. That's in the Constitution now. And so, you know, our taxes are very, very reasonable here in the city of Lafayette. And it's just not possible to pay all the staff. You know, we have rules and regulations on how many staff people we have to have present at Tropicana Cove, how many have to be on the deck at one time. That's state law. I mean, it takes a lot of money to run those, you know, to do those things. And I understand their concern, but I also think, you know, I think people have to think reasonably. How can they, when they have to pay all those people, and those people get benefits and salaries, and we're trying to pay a decent wage, and people are hard to find. I mean, we're paying over $14 an hour, and we still can't even hire landscapers for seasonal. We're short landscapers. We're short custodians. I don't know if we'll have to try to go up to $15, $16 an hour to get people, but it's just very challenging to keep everything free. That's challenging.
So, and I guess then to kind of quickly address then his other two, you know, we're talking about the zoo here. He then specifically asked about the train, if it would become free or if it's ticketed, and then if the carousel would be free when it is open.
No, I mean, they won't be. The train is not free, and the train has, as he indicated, has not been for a long time. I mean, time. And so there'll be a minimum charge on that, and there'll be a small charge on the carousel. But again, you know, those are just really, when you look at, you need people to operate them, get people on and off, people to take tickets, people to stand there to make sure people don't get over the fence and get hurt, and the things we've got to do. Those are just really, really tough to keep free, but we're going to do everything we can to keep that price as minimal as possible. You know, you can still, up to this day, buy a zoo membership for $35, and you can get into the zoo free for, up to May 17th. I mean, the deadline's quickly coming. Then it goes to $50, but we sold 1,000 of those already. Over 1,000 of those.
And is that a yearly membership? Does that last?
Yes. Okay. Gets you in the zoo for a year free, gets you two free passes to Tropicana Cove, which are worth $9 and something a piece. So that's $18 or $19. And then other discounts off the zoo programs. And so I would encourage people, if you go to the zoo on a regular basis, to, you know, before the end of the week here, look into, you know, buying a zoo membership, which, you know, does get you in, but it also helps us fund the zoo and take care of those animals that we want to take care of, you know, best we can.
That is our time for today. Mayor Wisworski, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Emily.
You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.
IUPUI has ranked second in the country for addressing sustainability goals and ranks in the top 30.